So you get enough food? Not enough?
Well, we don't eat meat and fish, so most of it's meat and fish. There's a lot, but we don't eat it all. So.
Yes, this is difficult to find. When I came here, I was a vegetarian, so I had to change. Well, we just eat what it's getting in the bowl. Like, just like the Lord Buddha said, whatever is in the bowl, that's what you eat. One doesn't select this, or one doesn't select that. It's a useful training. Pure vegetarian food is hard to find, so you just have to pick out that. Sri Lanka, they also eat just vegetarian, no? You know, Devadatta proposed, you know, to be vegetarian. Mm-hmm. And to go in the forest. And you know who Devadatta was. Tried to kill the Buddha. A lot of things are outside. You are Christians, or most of you have been educated as Christians. And even Jesus said, you know, it's not so important what goes into the mouth, but it's more important what goes out of the mouth. That's where the problem is. Whatever we do, whatever we think, and whatever we speak. And speaking is the most difficult task to get some mindfulness of. So when we talk to somebody, you know, we suddenly are completely occupied with just talking, without being able to have some mindfulness of what we are talking about, or why we are doing this, or why we are saying this, or why we are defending ourselves. It's going so fast, extremely fast. And one can do a lot of harm. Not only harm to others, but harm to oneself as well. And it's the same thing, it's not so important what we wear, but how we behave. Don't come like to Tanachan. It still looks, you know, as long as it's the colors of the monks, you know, it's not appropriate. And you don't need to have that shoulder piece. Or what is it? It's a sankati, or please don't wear it when you go to the sala, or when you come here. These things are really minor. The rules that we have. At least, you know, I can only talk from the rules of the monks. Every one of them, even the lesser one, the Lord Buddha has thought up or proposed to reduce the impact of the world or the senses of the world on us. Not to get us into the habit of lay people. Because just putting on a robe doesn't mean that a lay person has ordained, or that a lay that we have changed our inner attitude. We have made a decision the moment we put on the robe. Yes, we want to put on the robe. And that's it. We make so many decisions a day, a year. It's one of the decisions. To become one means ordaining the kilesas as well. And that is the tough thing. This is the tough part. And if you remember what I last said, most problems start with our conceit, with our views and our opinions, what should and what should not. In Europe we have a nice saying, when you go to Rome, do like the Romans. Don't stick out. If you want to come here, you don't want to come here to show off. You want to come here to learn Dhamma. This is the important thing. To learn the Dhamma. To learn the Dhamma from a renowned teacher, like Thanachan Mahapo. A teacher that we all know has gone to enlightenment. Has done with the kilesas, has done with avijja. And he kindly teaches now for 50 years. Over 50 years. He teaches the path to his pupils or to his students for over 50 years. And he tries to put up the monastery in a way that it doesn't collide with the outside world, but doesn't collide with the Dhamma. So that every step that is taken in the monastery, every action that is done in the monastery is in line with the Dhamma. He says the work of the recluse or the work of the samana is the work of walking chankrum and sitting in samadhi. This is the only work. The other things, the other activities that need to be done are reduced to the minimum. To the absolute minimum. And if they are done quickly, they are done mindfully and quietly. That's what his teaching is. And doesn't get in the habit, you know, while doing the chores, to start talking with this person or that person or arguing about this or arguing about that. And just does it quietly. One looks what the others for sweeping. One looks where the others sweep and one doesn't get into the way. One needs mindfulness all the time. But he says these activities are not actually practice. They need to be done and I have done my best, as he said, I have done my best to reduce them to the minimum of amount. So when you see what happens in the morning, when the bhikkhus go on arm round, they do not just walk slowly, they just walk very quickly. And when they distribute the food, they do that very quickly as well. And when they eat, it's more than quickly. It's very difficult to eat within that time, you know, your full amount. If you can eat 50%, then it's much. Most of the time it's 30% or 40% of food. Because the time is limited. You don't have the time. And the reason is not to eat quickly because it's healthy, but to eat quickly so that the kilesas cannot choose this kind of food or choose that kind of food. We also don't eat with a spoon. I think you've noticed. And it's all these things are helpful for the Dhamma. You can't eat the expensive thing, you just eat to get full. That's the only purpose of eating. And eating is the only thing, and that's why he reduced it, where the bhikkhu still can delight him. where the practitioners or where the samaniras can still delight. So, it's the most point of our attention as practitioners to put our attention on the food. What goes in? Not to get indulged, not to indulge into the food. Oh, this is nice or that is nice. Just being mindful, this is this kind of taste. It's salty, or it's hot, or it's spicy, or it's cold, or it's soft. This is the thing that we should do. We should be mindful from the morning, from the moment we open our eyes to the moment we close our eyes. Mindfulness should pervade in all our activities, especially when we're doing our practice of sitting or walking, but also in the activities when we wash ourselves or when we eat or when we walk from here to there, and especially when we talk. Normally we do not talk only if there's a reason to talk, and there are very little reasons to talk. Mindfulness is the key to the practice. Mindfulness is the basis of practice. But it's just not, it must be the right kind of mindfulness. Sama samadhi, right kind of mindfulness. Not the mindfulness a thief needs to rob a bank. This is wrong kind of mindfulness. So the mindfulness of our daily activity includes, is it necessary, or includes what kind of effect does it have on the body or on the citta. This is the mindfulness that we need. We need every thought we need to investigate. Every thought we need to be mindful of, not only being mindful that we have a thought, but also being mindful or being aware, it's probably the better word, being aware of the effect of each kind of thought or each kind of word that drops in our ears or each kind of word that leaves our lips. This is the mindfulness that is necessary to gain enlightenment. This is the mindfulness that is necessary to walk along the path. If we have this kind of mindfulness, we are mindful of whatever we are doing, we are mindful of whatever we are thinking, and we are mindful of why we are thinking this, and we are mindful of why we are acting like this. Then we can find the solution to the problem. But only then, if we are just are mindful of the things arising and ceasing, without being mindful of the effect it has on us, there will be no cure. There will be just mindfulness, and this is not the right kind of mindfulness. If we are mindful of a feeling arising, and then stay with the mindfulness on this feeling, and see it ceasing away, and see this is the law of anicca, then this is also mindfulness. Mindfulness of the three characteristics that prevent or that pervade all this universe. The mindfulness of anicca, anatta, dukkha. Anicca being impermanent, everything arises and ceases. And you know every thought arises and must cease. If you're not putting it up again, then it ceases. Ceases and will vanish in the vast sea of thoughts. A memory comes up, arises, stays on, changes and ceases. And it will vanish again in the vast sea of memories. That's all what is happening. We have to get clear of that. This is the law of anicca. Our body was born and our body will die. And our body changes during our lifetime. First we have to train it for 20 years. We have to train it to walk. That takes us 2 years and a lot of pain. And a lot of suffering. Then we have to train it to speak. That's another period of suffering. People don't understand us because we just say blah, blah, blah. And we want to be understood because we want this or we want that. And then people don't understand us, they give us the wrong thing or we get the wrong thing, and then we have enough dukkha. So how long did it take us to train how to speak? A year, 2 years, or 3 years. And then another period is to train our mind. That takes a long time. To train our mind, and until we can use this body fully, we are already grown-ups, like 15 or 16 years. And then we have a little time, maybe 10 to 20 years, where we can use this body to the utmost. Just for our pleasure, just for fun riding. And then it starts to crack up. Then it starts to break away. Then some of the parts of the body don't work anymore. Or we get sick. Until the end we have to die. And then, in the moment we die, we think about our youth and want a new body. And then we get this new body and we train it again. We train how to walk. And it doesn't get easier. From birth to birth, it doesn't get easier. We train how to speak, we train how to think, and we train how to act. And that takes another 15 years until we are completely able to use this body to the fullest. And then another 20 years and another 40 years of breaking up again. Then dying again. Think about this very clearly. Put it into your heart. You've done this, or we've done this, for such a long time. Not only for one birth, not only for 100 births, not only for 1 million births. We have done it for so many million or billions of births. One time being a human, one time being an animal, one time being in the hell, one time being in the heaven. It's a roller coaster of life. Slow is the way up and fast is the way down. Up is heaven and down is hell. And it's not so that we can, if we do a lot of good karma in this life and we have done a lot of bad karma in the last life, it's not that we can erase our bad karma. Bad karma is there and just waits until it's ripe and then it will show its fruit. So it doesn't matter, you know, how good we are in this life, it still could happen because of the very bad karma we have done in our previous life that this will pull us down. Or we go first to heaven and after heaven, like Tanaja Mahabhor saw within his own birth, he immediately went from heaven down to hell. And that is a big change. And then he went back up in heaven. Because this kind of karma that we have sown needs to be reaped. And that if it's good karma, then it needs to be reaped either in the heavenly realms or in the human realms or in the upper realms. And if it's bad karma, it needs to be reaped and then we need to go down. And that's why it's a roller coaster. There's no end. Now look at the wagons in the roller coaster. When they go up, you know, they go down and they go up and they go down and they go up and then they go down. And we think it's such a lot of fun. Don't we? Now we are still young, or most of you are still young. Now you still think it's a lot of fun. When you become 45, you know suddenly this thing is happening to your body. Then the body doesn't walk anymore. The body, when you get up, you know this is hurting or that is hurting. You can do it as you used to do. You walk down the steps and suddenly your knee fails and you, instead of walking down the steps, you roll down the steps. Not because you were unmindful, just because the knee fails to work. Or this fails to work, or the arm fails to work, or the leg fails to work, or this fails to work and that. And then it starts going down. This is going down, the teeth are going down, and. But when we are young, you know, of course I remember, you know, we don't think about these things. We think only how foolish they are, these old people. So how long do we want to do this? What is there still that we want to do? What is there still that we want to accomplish? When we think about this life, okay, yes, I haven't been a doctor, I want to become a doctor. Or the doctor thinks I want to become an engineer or a musician. Or a dancer or whatever. Or a football star or what I don't know. We haven't been that. So we want it, you know, in the next life we train ourselves, you know, to be that. And it's the same thing. Think about it, the ingredients are the same. There's a body. Be it male or female. There are feelings, neutral, pleasant or unpleasant, in every kind of life. There are memories, good memories and bad memories. There are thoughts, good thoughts and bad thoughts. Or wholesome, it's better to call it wholesome thoughts and unwholesome thoughts. And there is consciousness. So, in this life, these things exist, and in the next life, the same things exist. Feeling triggers a thought or triggers a memory that increases this feeling. This triggers another thought or another memory, and this increases the feeling. And before we open our eyes, we have a built-in emotion. So strong that we think we can't even handle it. Not knowing that we are the ones who produced it. Just by letting it go. If you don't hold the snowball at the top of the mountain, it will become an avalanche. But if you can stop it at the top of the mountain, it won't go down. And most of all, it won't be able to kill you. Normally, the little snowballs that we see and think, oh, I don't care, you know, it doesn't matter. That matters the most. Who is telling us this doesn't matter? The kilesas are telling us this doesn't matter. And this doesn't matter. And that is not so important. And that is not so important. But what is really not important, that is the most utmost important thing for the kilesas. This we should do. That we should do. So we should look very carefully about our mind. We should very carefully look about the citta, what it tells us. Why do you tell us? Investigating, why does it tell us? Why tell us to be like this or to be like that? So for a monk or for an ordained person, the Vinaya or the rules of the monk are very good help. They are the utmost help for the monk. Constantly has to train himself, is this allowed or is this not allowed? Is this against one of the rules or is this against another rule? Or is this within the rules or is this at the borderline of the rules? If it is at the borderline, we don't do it. So whatever he does, if he sits and gets up, you know, and then he suddenly feels dirty, when he has to drink, then he has to sit down back again. Because it's not allowed for a monk to drink while he's standing. So these are all the rules, you know, to help us get in touch with what we are actually doing. We have forgotten so many things. We think we are doing things. We think we are extremely mindful when we're walking from here to there. But instead of being mindful, we just think, see how mindful you are. I'm walking, I'm walking, I'm walking. But that has nothing to do with mindfulness. Mindfulness, awareness is just aware. Not thinking. It's just aware of the process of walking. Then we are really mindful. But if I think I'm walking, I'm walking, I'm walking, you know, see how beautiful mindfully I'm walking. That has nothing to do with mindfulness. Mindfulness is awareness of the process, of what is going on right now. And thinking is a thought process that normally coincides with or collides with awareness. Understand that. It's the rules, you know, that make it easier for a monk to train mindfulness. Before I became a monk, I didn't thought that it was necessary. But after I've become a monk, you know, I saw it's the beauty of the rules. They're so beautiful laid out, just to keep us mindfully all the time. Am I doing this right? You know, how should I? Oh, all the rules, you know, that prevent us getting into contact with this world. Preventing us to stir up trouble within our own hearts. Like the phones. Now you have a phone, you know, and you call up this person and call up that person. And it stirs up immediate problems. Newspapers, radio, and so on. It doesn't matter if we know what is happening in the world, we can't change it anyway. If it happens around us, you know, we are aware of it. That's all what we need. Why do you need to know, you know, that there's a war? If our mother or if our parents died or if our brothers and sisters died, they will have died anyway. We can't help them. But if they are close to us and we see them dying, then that this is a completely different subject. Why to know all about these things? So I think I told you, you know, when monks ask, you know, that they want to go and bury their parents or cremate their parents, you know, Tanachan told them, yes, you're sure you can go, but you don't need to come back. It reminded me so much of this saying of Jesus when some of the disciples of Jesus asked them, you know, I want to burn my parents. And he said, let the dead bury the dead. Let the dead people, the people, you know, who seem to be alive, but within their citta, they are dead. Let them bury the dead. Why us, you know? And it just fits in. It just beautiful fits in. The world is going its way. If we want it or not, we cannot change, or nobody, not even people, not even a lot of people, couldn't change the Second World War. Even in Germany they tried, you know, they got killed for that. So it wasn't possible. It's not possible to change the history. And it's not possible to change the future. It's only possible to change ourselves. And that we can do right now. We don't have to wait for tomorrow. So don't look so much at the outside. Look much more at the inside. What does it mean? When you have the rules, when you have your rules, when we have our rules, then we look at the inside. What does it mean? Just don't follow blindly the rules, because then they don't have an effect. What does it mean? Yeah? And is it necessary? Then we can make the right distinction. And then we can make the right decision. When we are samanyas, or when we are monks, or when we are nuns, within our heart, The outside doesn't matter. The outside is just a look. For us as a recluse is to be, to fit in. And when you look at the rules of the monk, is to fit in with the society, not to upset society. That was the purpose of most of the rules for the monk and for the nun. Not to upset the society, but just to live very humble, in a very humble manner, in a very humble way. And in a very peaceful way. But of course we are used to do that. We see rules and then we try immediately the first thing, how can I find a loophole? I don't want to do this, how can I find a loophole? We are all little lawyers in order to try to find and squeeze out. How we can still do what we want. That was my experience when I was in the monasteries in England. They all tried to squeeze out the rules. Here there is no question about the rules. You just hold them. And use your own wisdom to get to the knowledge. Why? And there's actually, if you live the life of a samanya, if you just go on Pindapat, collect your food, eat your food, and then go in your kuti and practice, there's nothing that prevents you doing this. All the rules are there for preventing you to get into contact with other people or getting to do this or getting to do that. So for the real thing, for the real purpose of our ordaining, the rules do not hinder us in practicing. But they only hinder us in getting entangled in the world, in getting our heart upset, or pulling out the fires of the world to burn our heart, or pulling in the fires of the world to burn our heart. It's not something. It's not a prison that a monk or a nun lives in, but it's actually prevention of bad things happening to us. So if you see it this way, or if we would see it this way, and if the lay people would see it, that it's a prevention of not going to the bad side, the five precepts, just the five precepts, and keep them, just for their own sake, then they wouldn't find it's a prison. They would rejoice within that freedom. Of course, the freedom of a lay person is much higher than the freedom of a monk or of a nun who has a lot of rules. But the inner freedom becomes, the more rules we have, the inner freedom becomes higher and higher and higher. And disturbance becomes lesser and lesser and lesser. And that's the purpose of the rules. So if you have rules and follow them, just keep this in mind. Otherwise you're in trouble, and otherwise you sooner or later will give up the rope. Because you're fighting with something that is actually giving you inner freedom. It was designed for us to become undisturbed of the world and undisturbed of the sensations of the world. That's what it was designed for us. It wasn't designed for us to gangle us, is it an English word? Gangle? What's it?
Empower us.
Huh?
Give us power.
Yeah, no, not empower us. No, not to punish us or to
Oppress
us, yes. I don't know where this word is coming from. Anyway, so, they are not there to oppress us. They are us, they are there to give us freedom. And when I came here, I remember the only thing I wanted to do, and I wasn't able to do in Europe, was just to practice. practice for 24 hours a day, as much as I could. And here was the only place where I could do it. In all the other monasteries, you have to work your butt off. You have to do this, you have to do that, or even after 1 year, you have to go out teaching. Nothing here. If Tenacham Mahabua caught me in the beginning time, caught me talking to a lay person, a Westerner who came there, I just talked for 5 minutes. And then he came out of his kuti directly towards me. And I better took my leave very quickly and run back to my kuti. I just knew from the expression of his face, you know, that was something he wouldn't try. He wouldn't tolerate. And he did that every time. Whenever I did something wrong, you know, just needed, you know, you always had to be very mindful. When he was still young, now he just doesn't have the power. When he was still young, he was there all the day. You know, he hardly went out of the monastery. So wherever you went, wherever you were, you had to be mindful, you know, if he is not behind your back. And it happened, you know, one time or two times it happened that he was behind my back. Normally I saw him coming from the distance, you know. So I could still hurry up and go back. So this is the kind of training. This is the kind of training that is very helpful. That is very helpful for mindfulness. If monks have been here for a long time and undergone this training, they have a basic set of mindfulness. But of course today, when the new monks are coming in, you know it's not the same. When you see Tenacham Mahabua 6 years ago, he still was walking, you know, very, very quickly. And now he doesn't have the power anymore. He's just falling apart, you know. Amazing how he can keep himself together. But at that time he was so quick. You really had to be very mindful. Especially if you were not sure of if this is proper or not. He told you immediately that this wasn't proper. For instance, washing your robes at the improper times. You just started, you know, and then and then he came. It's not the proper time, you know, in the morning to wash your robes. You can wash them, you know, after the meal, or you can wash them after the midday drink, or that's a proper time. The proper time is, you know, to sit in samadhi and walk chakra. So when he walked around and made his course around the monastery 3 times a day, and if he didn't catch you there at your kuti for 3 times, one after the other, then you know that you could go. You could leave the monastery. Because he only encouraged people to come here, or allowed people to stay here, if they are practicing. That was the only reason. Not the reason that they were advanced in their practice or not advanced in their practice, that wasn't the reason. The reason, if they wanted to come to practice. And then he sometimes asked the monk or asked the lay people, how long have you been here? And then the lay people, the monk said, oh, I've been here 3 weeks. It's enough. You can go. Because within the 3 weeks, he hasn't improved his practice. That means he didn't practice. Or within the 3 years, he's gone stay with his practice, so he could go. So there was a constant pressure, you know, on doing the practice. And that helps, of course. If you know there's something behind you, or if you know that there's a tiger behind you, the moment you get up, you know, it growls. You go and sit. You don't dare to get up. Or if you have a snake or cobra in position, you better sit through your pain. you don't get up. And this kind of practice, you know, this kind of pressure behind it, this kind of enforcing, is of course a very big help if you really want to get the way out of dukkha. If you really want to reach the stream, enter the stream, or get a Sakadagami, once returner or non-returner, or even arahat. It's not easy. And if there's nothing behind you, and if you don't have enough power, you know, to find the tiger within yourself, or the snake within yourself, that makes you constantly scary that you're not doing your practice. You have to find that. If you don't have a master, or if you don't have a teacher that constantly, you know, looks at you, watches over you, then you have to find the teacher within your own heart. Or the tiger, you know, that makes you scary. I didn't do enough practice today. Or why did I, you know, why I don't get up so early. It's too early. It's much too early. There should be always this tiger warning us, you know, that we've done too little practice. And then we will have a smooth way. A way, you know, that slowly goes up the mountain. Slowly improving. And the slowly improving, our peacefulness and our happiness also improves. And that's why we want to do the practice in the first place anyway. We want to overcome the three fetters. The first three fetters that bind us to this realm of rebirth. The first three fetters are doubt. Doubt that there is heaven, doubt that there is hell. Doubt that there is karma, doubt that there is result of karma. Doubt that there is nibbana, that is one of the first fetters. Doubt that there is a way leading out of dukkha. When we give up our practice, we give it up because of our doubt. Doubt that this way that was taught will lead to any effect. What is the second fetter? What is it? Sila Pata Paramasa. Oh yeah. It's fiddling with the roots. Today or now I take on the roots, and the next moment I do not keep the roots or the precepts. This is the second fetter. And it holds for lay people, and it holds for monks and nuns. Just keep them. Don't worry. Just keep them, as I explained before. They give us the utmost freedom that we can have within our state. If we are monks, then it's this freedom for the monks. If we are nuns, then it's freedom for the nuns. And if it's a precept, if we are lay people, then it's a freedom for the lay people. Just, when you take them on, just take them on. And that's it. There's no question about it. There's not, now is an exception. There is no exception. And that is the second fetter. Because now we want something and say, oh yeah, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter is the speech of the Kilesas, is the words of the Kilesas. Of course it does matter a lot. Because now and then we feel guilty. Oh, I should have done it, so I will keep it from now. And the next day we forget all our good intentions and do the same thing again. So keep the precepts. Do not doubt that there is hell and there is heaven. not only is hell in our hearts or in our citta, but there are distinct places where beings are in hell and beings are in heaven. That there is karma. Whatever we think, whatever we say, and whatever we do will have effect. Will have either a positive effect or a negative effect. Everything. And how many things are we doing in one moment? We're not even aware of it. So this will all have effect on the future. And whatever happens right now is all the effect from the past. So think about very carefully. If you just do your practice, then you don't have to worry. If you keep in within the rules, you don't have to worry. You don't really have to worry, because they are all laid out. And if you're a monastery like this, where a teacher like Kanacha Mahabua looked after everything, every activity in the world, to make it utterly perfect for increasing Dhamma, then we don't even have to worry about how it is done, it is. If it's done here like this, then just do it. Don't even worry. It was laid out by a person who sees farther than me, who has a far sight, or who is far-sighted. He is extremely far-sighted. We cannot even see enough. We are all blind. We are all blinded by avijja, we cannot see. But a person who has got rid of avijja, he can see. He can see wherever he wants to see. He can see in the future, he can see in the past. So this is the second fetter, not fiddling with the rules. The third fetter is more difficult. It's attachment to the body. It's the thought that I and the body are one and the same thing. That the citta and the body are one and the same thing. When you see a car and a driver in the car, you know there are two distinct things. And so is it with this body and the citta. The citta is the citta and the body is the body. But the citta is the driver of the body. Get this clear. Get this understanding very clear. That the body has nothing to do with the driver, nothing to do with the citta. Get it. So you have to see, you actually have to get out of the car. To see that the car and the driver are two different things. If the driver gets in the car and doesn't put the key into the ignition, nothing will happen. If he puts it in the ignition, turns the key, you know, the engine will stop. And so will it be with the citta in the body. If the citta goes out, the body doesn't do a thing. Except for breathing, you know, in the blood flow. That's its normal, natural function. Every movement we do is ordered on by the citta. Remember this well. The citta is that moves the body. Like the driver is moving the car. He puts the steering wheel left, and then the car will turn left and not right. He puts on the accelerator and the car will accelerate. He puts on the brakes and the car will brake. The car cannot do it on its own. And that is the same thing with the citta in the body. Get it clear. Understand. You need to understand that the citta and the body are two different things. And this understanding will not take place in your brains. Got that clear? It will not take place in the brains. This understanding will not help. The understanding that we need, that the citta and the body are two different things, has to take place within our heart. The citta has to understand it before it can let go of it. If the brains can understand it, we would be all free by now. Nobody of us likes Buddha. Nobody of us likes dukkha. Nobody of us likes greed or hate. If you could let it go just by our understanding, you know, we all be free by now. If you could go the path of enlightenment or the Eightfold Path just by reading books, by understanding the path, we all would be free by now and there would be nobody. We wouldn't need to sit through pain and investigate this and investigate that. So, get that right? The understanding is not taking place in our brains. So we have to re-educate ourselves. We have, in this time, we have to teach our heart. Or we have to teach a chitta. See? Do you understand now? No, I don't understand. So do it again. Until you understand. And don't get fooled by the understanding that takes place up in the brains. This is not right understanding. And you can test it. You can doubt. The moment you can doubt your understanding, it's wrong understanding. It's only understanding of our brains. You understand that, right? The understanding takes place in our heart. You can call it inside or you can call it inner seeing. Maybe it's a better word, because understanding we usually associate with the brain. It's an inner seeing that the chitta and the body are two different things. And in combination with the other two fetters, sila pada paramasa, the fiddling with the roots, or the doubt that there's heaven and or hell. If you undermine all of these three fetters, then you have a very good chance, just in a very quiet moment, to enter the stream. And the stream is the first point. It's the first point of entry on our way out. Interesting enough, in this tradition nobody talks about stream entry, nobody talks about Sakadaka. The first stage of Arya Sat is the stage of Anagami. It's never even mentioned. And sometimes then Ajahn Mahabho in some of his talks he said, you know, there are four kinds of trash. The first kind of trash is the worldling. The second trash is the sotapanna. The third trash is the sakadagami. And the fourth trash is the anagami. Compared to the arahant, they are all trash. But some of them, the arya trash, is the recyclable trash. It's the usable trash. One can use to go. But anyway, it's never mentioned. It's never mentioned in any books. You know, when Tanachaman reached Sotapanna, it's only mentioned when they reach Anagami. And why is it? Because it's the only stage where you clearly see this is helpful on the path and this is not helpful on the path. As a Sotapanna, you saw Nibbana and it's a very deep experience, but actually, you know, you're still so extremely foolish. You still don't know. You still don't know a thing. Why can a Sotapanna be reborn, you know, and have a family and have kids? Have this profession or that profession if he wouldn't be foolish in the sense of the word. So, that's why the things are not mentioned. And that what is mentioned is Anagami. Because it's the non-return. It's the one who has gone beyond greed and hate. And greed and hate are important. Are extremely important. And they are all rooted in this body. So the work of understanding that the chitta and the body are two different things, as I explained last time, with the Asubha practice, it's included. It's the understanding that it will arise automatically. So it's not this part that I just talked about. But it's the whole part of understanding that the body is the pot and the earth of the plant of greed and hate. If we understand that clearly, Then we can go on to the stage of anagami. Because greed and hate hasn't even been touched in the stage of a sotapanna. Think about it. He's so foolish. He's so extremely foolish. He knows he has Dhamma with him and it will guide him. But how long does it take him? 7 lives? 6 lives? 5 lives? 5 times going through this hell again? Going through birth, where you nearly die, educating this body. And you know, every one of you, and especially in the West, you know these times of youth are extremely difficult. Fighting with the parents, fighting with this, fighting with that. Learning to talk, learning to think, going and getting an education until you get your first job. Then it's getting easier. Then you get your own money and you get independent. But before, you're always dependent. So, and the sotapanna still has all these. So he is recyclable trash, he still is trash. The worldling, of course, you know, it's useless. It's useless trash. You just have to bury it and to wait until it conforms and gets earth and air element and water element and fire element to build a new trash. Trash can. At that time when he was talking about it, I didn't understand. I didn't understand, how can he call these Arya people, you know, trash? Yeah, so, you know, they're noble people. How can he call them trash? And he asked us after the talk, do you understand? You understand? Now I understand why he talks about it. Because they're still blind. They're still so blind to the truth. They're so blind to the truth that they don't see and do all the foolish things and all the wrong things. Ajahn Mun, when he was getting to the stage of anagami, or when he was finished, then at his time, you know, because there wasn't any teacher, because he really clearly saw, this is this and this is that. This leads to the path of enlightenment, and this is a hindrance on the path of enlightenment. Out of metta, he was teaching his fellow bhikkhus. The anagami is the first person, because greed and hate are like deep, thick blinds that blind our eyes. If greed and hate are gone, just the latter or higher fetters are there. So one can teach clearly. One sees the way clearly, one knows what is good, and one knows what is helpful, one knows what is wholesome, and one knows what is not wholesome. What leads to the way, and what doesn't lead to the way. One sees that very clearly, because greed and hate is gone. Any ambition has gone. The body has completely removed. When he dies, you know, he will not be reborn, neither in the heavenly realms, nor in the lower realms, nor in the human realms. There are only 5 upper or higher heavenly realms that are reserved for the anagami, depending on his fetters. And the anagami is the only one who develops or falls upwards and not falls backwards. Everybody else falls down, but he falls up. It's automatic. From that point on, it's automatic. The development is automatic. He doesn't even have to do it. He can do it in his sleep. But when one thinks about the time that it still takes, you know, if he doesn't do a thing, it still takes 50,000 years. Each of these realms, 10,000 years. Each of the fetters, 10,000 years. Getting rid. So think about what you do very clearly. Understand the importance of mindfulness. And when I say mindfulness, I mean more. Awareness. To be aware. Mindfulness has a, sometimes I feel it's a wrong translation. It doesn't have that impact of awareness of what is going on. When we walk and think we walk, we think we still are mindful. That is not mindful. It's awareness of our process, of all the processes at the same time that are going on. When we are aware of the body, you know, just of the movement of the body, then we are aware, then we are actually mindful, then we have sati. And this kind of sati, that will bring us along the path. That will bring us to understanding that takes place in our heart. Now understand that the understanding that we need to go to the deliverance of dukkha is not taking place in our brains. It's taking place in our heart or in our citta. So we have to train the citta. And that is a completely different training than training the mind. Understand? And about the roots, understand it, just keep them. They are there for your own freedom, for your inner freedom. Not for the outer. And if you haven't seen yet heavenly realms or hell realms, then just give it that they exist. We don't know? Of course we don't know. But don't doubt. And don't doubt that everything that happens to you right now is the result of your karma. Whatever you have done in the past, you know, will present itself right now. Or in the future, even in the future. And whatever you do right now, in this very moment, this is going to determine your future. Understand this clearly. So, and with this I end my talk. Today was a bit.